Hello, welcome to the No Normal Show for Thursday, September 17th, 2020, brought to you by Revive Health. This is our weekly deep dive into how hospital and health system marketers can navigate what we are calling the No Normal. I am Chris Bevelo, Health Systems Practice Lead at Revive Health, and your host for the show. I am joined, as always, by Chase Kleckner, who is Senior Marketing Manager at Revive Health and our show's producer. Hello, Chase.
Hey, Chris. Good to see you.
Good to see you as well. We are also joined by Alan Shoebridge. Alan is the Director of Marketing Communications for Salinas Valley Memorial Healthcare System. He's also held senior marketing communication leadership roles at Kaiser Permanente and Providence St. Joseph Health, two of the nation's largest healthcare providers. Hello, Alan.
Hey, Chris. How's it going?
Good. Good to talk to you again.
Thanks for having me on. I'm happy to join you.
Yeah, looking forward to diving in. We'll get started here in just a second. A couple of notes. On this podcast, we share industry trends, research, stories from folks like Alan and others inside the industry, anything that would be helpful to helping health system marketers navigate the no normal. If you want to know more about what we mean by the no normal, some of the principles that we have laid out in terms of trying to thrive the no normal, check out a blog post that we wrote. Chase will share a link to that in the chat function. If you are listening live, you've joined us live, thank you so much for being here with us. If you have a question for Alan or myself or Chase, please put that in the Q&A queue in Zoom. That's what we review to see where the questions are. We'll try to get those questions as we go or at the end of the show. You can use the chat function I mentioned a second ago. Chase will be using that to put links to content that we're referencing. You can use that to talk to other folks who are attending live. But if you have a question for us, make sure it ends up in that Q&A queue. Also, remember, you can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes or wherever you listen to podcasts. And by the end of the day, we'll provide a recording of this episode on our website at thinkrevivehealth.com/COVID-19. All right. So we've got a stacked agenda today. We're going to dive into a great topic in terms of planning and how we kind of approach planning in this no normal. We wanted to kind of just, again, this isn't news for people and it's a bit depressing, but the no normal, as we've said, is going to be with us for a while. And I think yesterday we were reminded of that in a couple ways related to each other. So the CDC director, Dr. Redfield was in a Senate hearing and was asked when he expects a vaccine to be available to the general public. And this is from an article in the New York Times. I'll quote, and Chase will provide a link to it. He said, quote, "If you're asking me when it is going to be generally available to the American public so we can begin to take advantage of vaccine to get back to our regular life, I think we're probably looking at the third, late second quarter, third quarter, 2021. So first of all, here's the leader of the CDC telling us that anything looking like a regular or normal is probably the third quarter of 2021. So that's just, you know, again, kind of reiterates why we've got a ways to go here. But another aspect of the no normal is that it's confusing, there's uncertainty. And what happened after Dr. Redfield said that, I think, speaks to that, because of course we had the president come out and completely contradict that later in the day, saying, no, he was wrong. It's going to be available in a few weeks. It's going to be available to millions of people immediately. So if that's not confusing enough, you've got the other candidate running for president saying, hey, I trust the scientists, not our president. So that's more confusion. Later, after the president weighed in, the CDC came back and said, oh, you know, Dr. Redfield's comments were maybe misinterpreted. He didn't mean that it wouldn't be available to the third quarter, more that everybody will have had access to it by the third quarter, which again, when you go back to the quote I read, is not what he said. So Alan, here we are. No normal, uncertainty, long-term horizon, pretty frustrating.
What's your fifth principle? Operate comfortable in chaos. I think chaos is the fifth principle that you guys have. And I think we're going to be there. We're going to be there for a while. Absolutely.
Dad, and we're working on some research on this, but obviously as we launch into this whole pandemic in March, the role of hospitals and health systems to really be advocates for health information about The importance of washing your hands and the importance of social distancing and eventually the importance of wearing a mask. And then as we reopened, trying to understand, you know, it's safe to come back to the hospital. Now we have this other huge, huge issue out there. And given what I just laid out, and we know it's all over the board in terms of vaccines, hospitals and health systems better be preparing, right, to serve that role once again, because we're getting different opinions from almost everywhere you turn.
Yeah, I think people are really going to turn local. And I was just thinking about myself. I mean, I've never been anywhere close to a vaccine skeptic. And I would have always said, you know, whatever the CDC says, that's good enough for me. I think this time I'm going to be having a conversation with my personal physician who I trust. And I'm going to probably want to know what our chief medical officer or health system says. He's an infectious disease specialist. He's 20 times smarter than me. And if he says this vaccine is safe, it's good, take it, I'm going to take it. But I think having that additional layer of trust to know it's safe, man, that wasn't a barrier. I don't think that was as big a barrier, you know, in the past. Now, there's always been people who are skeptical of vaccines, and we've had to battle that. But you didn't really question. A lot of people didn't really question, I think, the trusted experts. So now we're taking another level of trusted expertise. And I think it's going to fall to the healthcare systems and hospitals to back up those messages, but they're going to have to feel confident in it too, right? I mean, our leaders are going to have to say, we trust this, we want to give it to our patients, we want to give it to our employees. So there's going to be that. It's going to be a time where there's a lot of verification going on, I think, absolutely.
Yeah, and it's just, we don't need to go too deep into this, but it just does speak to that fifth principle of chaos, you know? And like you, I think a lot of people would have trusted the CDC before all of this, but we've seen enough articles about how there has been political influence, right? I don't know how long ago it was, maybe 3 or 4 weeks ago now, where the CDC kind of very surreptitiously, very quietly, didn't announce it, but changed the recommendation on, hey, you know, it used to be if you've been exposed to somebody who's been exposed, you should go get tested. And then they just changed it on their website. And people were like, whoa, wait a second, that's a big deal. And it turned out, we found out later, that was pressure from on high that forced them to do that. So now, you know, you don't know where to turn. And I think you're right. For the most part, hospitals and health systems have kept themselves out of being positioned as some kind of on one end or the other politically. And the more we can stay above that and be objective health experts, I think the better.
Yeah, I think that's right. And people trust us for, you know, offering the right advice, and they personal, but so much of that was at a personal level. I think this is just at a huge level. And just, I think too, like the logistics of, you know, who's going to do these vaccinations. I mean, I'm guessing that the hospitals, healthcare systems are going to be on the front lines, but from what I heard last, there may be 2 doses of the vaccine you need to get. If we're talking a couple hundred million people, if you're talking 70% of the population is going to get this or whatever, we're talking about having to maybe give as many as, you know, a couple hundred thousand vaccinations a day for a whole year. That's going to be logistically very challenging.
Yeah. Yeah. So, which is a good segue into planning for that, because we wanted to spend time with you, Alan, talking about planning. And obviously, now is the time of year for a lot of health systems, whether they have a fiscal year that starts in January, or even for those that start in July 1st. I mean, we know a lot of systems that start their planning at this time of year, even that far in advance, right? Planning is a unique beast now, given the normal and how we think about planning. So talk to us just a little bit about, you know, how you look at planning and what you're doing right now, just high level. You told a story before we got on the air about kind of how you went into 2020. Maybe you want to start with that.
Yeah, well, I went into 2020 and kind of thinking about, well, I've got my year sort of planned out. And this was from both a personal and professional aspect. Like, well, in quarter one, I'm going to try to really make sure I'm focused, make sure we're working the plan. We are on one of those fiscal years that starts in July. So, you know, this plan should be well established. Let's make sure everything's going well. In Q2, I'm going to think about, you know, looking at, hey, what's going on with measurement? How are we doing? Maybe Q3 is going to be a time where we're looking at doing some learning, doing some, you know, socializing, but just, you know, I had this whole kind of cadence. And then Q4 is, you know, that's a good time for planning. And, you know, I would say too, kind of prior to COVID, you know, all of us probably in June of every year, if we're on a calendar year, we'd be like, you know, we really ought to start thinking about the plan for the next year. And then we take a couple months off, we really do anything. And then maybe in September, we go, yeah, we got to get on that. And then about October, we'd start hitting it and we'd start doing it. Well, that is kind of where we are right now, because I would say between March and September, well, there was no time to do anything really. I mean, we were just kind of sprinting. We were getting a lot of stuff done. We were standing up in the organization, standing up new services, trying to figure out how to promote them. So there wasn't a lot of time to step back and look at a plan. I think maybe we're in a period right now for another month or two where you do have a little time to actually kind of step back, take a look at maybe putting together a plan. And I'll be honest, I don't know how long these plans are going to last. I mean, they may last 3 months, they may last 6 months, they might even last a month. But I think there's a lot of value in trying to get back to something that is really important for marketers. Marketers do have to have a plan. Like, you do have to have an annual plan. Now, what our annual plan looks like for 2021 versus what it might have looked like in 2018 or 2019, it could be very different. But I think the exercise of actually sitting down and thinking about, if we are open for business now, if we're back to kind of normal, what are we promoting? What are we doing? How are we doing it? Just those things, doing the regular things where you're looking at research, looking at your market research data, looking at your brand strength. Like, you should take time to do all that. You should put together a plan. Now, again, maybe it's a smaller plan than you've done in the past. Maybe it's, you know, again, it's something that you realize is going to have to be really fluid and flexible. But the discipline of actually sitting down, doing the plan, talking to your business partners, bringing your team involved to talk about priorities, that's a really helpful exercise that I think some of us have got a little breathing room to do in the month of September and October.
Yeah. And, you know, especially as we talk about the vaccine issue, which I don't know that that will subsume us to the degree that COVID did when it first hit, or reopening did in May and June. It's certainly going to be a high priority whenever vaccines become available, for us to be out in front of that. But that's really just one thing. I don't think it's going to take over our lives like we've had in the past. But to what degree, you know, we think back to March and April and May and how crazy things really were. You know, it's kind of once in a century kind of event. How much do we want to look at that and go, wow, there's a lot we should take away from this and apply it moving forward, versus, wow, that was an anomaly. And yeah, there may be some things, but really let's not be inhibited, or let's not be too tied to what we've gone through. We really need to think about things differently going forward. What's your perspective on that?
I think it's a mix. I think you need to look at what you know works. So when you've built all your plans in the past, relying on the fundamentals you've always done, relying on what you know is the process to get your objectives, to set your goals. But I think you take all this experience and you say, well, if in January, February, we get to the point where we're shutting down elective surgeries, or we've had to shut down our community because there's been a huge wave and maybe the flu's impacted things, well, you know kind of what you did last time. You've got a plan. So what I would say is, I think as I'm going in and making my plan, I'm going to take some of that and say, you know, in case of emergency, break glass, right? I mean, this is what we're going to pull out and what we're going to do. And that's instructive. So thinking about, well, you know, when we were in March and April, we really ramped up communications. We were going daily. We were getting things out, and that really worked. Like, let's do that again if we need to do it. So I think there's part of this where you sort of start very high level. You sort of lean on, again, where we build a marketing plan in normal times, but you got to have a section, or you got to have something in there that says, if this happens, if we see a real slowdown in business, if we have to lock down the community, here's the things we're going to do again. Here's where we're going to increase the frequency on this message here and that, or maybe we've got a campaign, you know, in our market, we put a campaign into market at a heavy time of COVID, and we only ran it for maybe a month or two, you know, and things got a little better. Well, that campaign could be deployed again immediately. Like, there's nothing about it that really needs to change. It really responds to what the situation is on the ground. Like, you have all that creative, you have that plan, it could be leveraged really easily. I just think you need to be prepared to do it quickly. And that should be a part of your plan. I would definitely make that part of your plan.
Yeah, that's really smart. You know, it's kind of weird to think about this, but as you're talking and we remember back when we were having to be so responsive, and we hear these amazing stories about, for example, the adoption of virtual visits, you know, systems going from zero to 70,000 in 1 month, or from 25 a week to 25,000 a week. And not, that's just one example, but how marketers themselves had to be way more responsive, had to move way faster. There's an element of that I think would be great to maintain. You know, to say, look, yes, we had to move faster and act faster, because of the situation. But there's value in being able to do that even when we're not in a crisis. Certainly not kind of like hair on fire reactionary, but even trying to implement a plan. Can we accelerate how we do that? Can we start building in principles of agile? Can we even think about planning in that regard? You referenced this a little bit before to kind of go meta on it, but instead of, you know, maybe you have an annual plan, but instead of revisiting it every quarter, revisit every month or every 2 weeks. We certainly know systems that are doing that from a financial operational standpoint, where they've condensed, because they've had to, when reporting is and when they adjust, and how much of that could stick around for good.
Yeah, absolutely. I do think one of the short-sighted things that marketers sometimes forget to do is actually you build a plan, but then you actually don't share the results of the plan or share the updates of the plan. So even some people may not even ever, maybe yearly they share the results, maybe they don't share the results at all. So I think for those people, like doing, getting on a quarterly basis with your business partners to sit down and say, here's what we did. But to your point, Chris, like if things are really wild in the market or at your system, it may make sense to actually do a monthly recap or something. Here's some new things we put in place. Here's what was effective. Here was wasn't. Because people, I found that people are really, they really embrace getting that type of information. But as a marketer communicator, like you got to take some action to actually push it out. Like you've actually got to develop a report. You got to build something. And you got to get time on people's calendars. And that's what people forget to do. And I think it's important to provide something that informs people about what's been going on. Because again, they see stuff, but they don't always know like what worked or what didn't. And they don't always see the whole breadth of everything you did. So I feel like there's always a lot of value in doing those kind of, you know, report outs and making sure that you know. And also, I guess on a personal level, taking that step back to make sure that anything you did, like you actually measured, you know whether it works, you're taking stock and thinking about like, do we need to pull this back? Do we accelerate it? So that's kind of like this ongoing, I guess I would say, you know, learning process that you need to be doing even in times like this, to step back once in a while and say, is this still working? If it's not, let's try something different. If it is, maybe we double down, but that should be happening. And I think I agree with you right now. Maybe it should be happening on a monthly basis if you can do it.
Yeah. And that speaks to one of the principles, actually, the no normal that we laid out, you know, the idea that if the no normal is all about uncertainty and to some degree chaos, as we kind of referenced yesterday, you know, on one hand, you can't just assume that what was right before works now. So that's one end of the spectrum. You're just going to go ahead and kind of ignore what might be in front of you and just blindly go forward based on what was working in the past. You also can't go all the other way and just say, well, we don't know anything, right? You've got to be nimble and you've got to be flexible as uncertainty continues, because you're going to be buffeted this way and that within your plan even. And that's where knowing what works is even more important now, because we don't, before maybe we had some idea of like, if we do these things, we can expect this outcome. But because we can't assume things are the same as they were before, we can't assume that just because we get somebody to schedule surgery, that they will still come in, right? That's something that we never had to deal with, at least not at a significant level, right? And that's still out there as people still have fears and as COVID ebbs and flows in different communities. So it seems to be even more important to be keeping your kind of thumb on the pulse of what you're doing so that you can learn quicker and adjust quicker, because that's what times demand.
Yeah, and I think too, like, I guess going back to more traditional times or whatever, and it was probably just about, you know, 8 months ago, but if you're going to put a campaign in the market, generally, I would say you're going to give it probably 6 months, maybe more, right, to run and make sure it's working. And you might do some tweaks along the way, but you kind of figure like this is going to be in the market for a while. But right now, the market's so dynamic and changing. Like, you could put something in the market, the conditions on the ground might change in 2 weeks, and you're like shutting down the access to that service or something. So the keeping your finger on the pulse, like what's going on in the organization, and making sure that we snap back really quickly and remove messaging that's not working, or, you know, replace it with something else. I think that is something that most systems did pretty well right back in March, you know, like trying to make sure we're showing the appropriate images, that we're not showing people doing things we don't want them to do, that were perfectly acceptable before. But you got to know what those conditions are, and you got to be smart about, you know, really saying, well, I know we committed to this and we're really excited about this service line, but right now it just doesn't make sense. So we got to pull this back. And then you got to have something, I think, to fill the gap. And that is, again, where we were talking a few minutes ago about having your plan and having that emergency piece in there that, again, says like, if everything I outline just goes in, you know, becomes on fire and doesn't work anymore, what am I going to do to fill the gap? And that's going to be a really important thing. And everyone should give that some real consideration as they're doing their planning process this year.
Yeah. Let's take that even a step further. There's a question, Alan, that I'm going to read to you that I think is along the lines of what you're talking about, but maybe even a different way to consider it. The question is, Alan, do you see COVID response being treated as crisis communications or something like a future service line treatment that needs to be communicated to the community on an ongoing basis?
Kind of both, I guess. I mean, that's a good question. I think in my role, I handle both internal communications for our organization, marketing, and then a lot of our external communications in terms of social media and newsletters and things like that. So I think COVID is kind of the thing where you sort of start inside out. Like you figure out, okay, what are we trying to communicate to all of our employees about what's going on at our hospital, our health system? Make sure that they're informed and engaged. That's your first piece. And so that does become part of, I think, what would be a crisis communications plan in a traditional sense, like making sure that your internal audiences are getting the right information, that they can speak to anything that they might get asked about. You're sharing as much information with them as you can. You're bringing them on board. And then you kind of go from there and say, okay, after that piece, what does the community need to know? And so it's just a super tactical example, but it's like your visiting hours, right? So that's something that we all had to deal with. You got to communicate to your employees first. You got to make sure they understand what's going on. You got to give them a heads up, but then you got to roll the message out to the community. And then as things change, you got to keep them informed. I do think as we kind of went from March and April, and I got to give a shout out to my team who did just a great job of providing, you know, developing a lot of excellent resources, videos and podcasts and email updates. There was a real thirst for information in those first couple months. Over the last month or two, it's been harder to get people's attention. We sort of scaled back some of the frequency just because people are inundated with COVID news. But keeping the community updated is really important. So I think you look at what's happening on the ground, and COVID kind of has to, your communications and your marketing has to flex to what's going on in the community. If the incidences are getting high, if the inpatients in your hospital are getting high, you need to double down on the messaging. So I don't know. I think it's a bit of a mix, but coming at it with that sort of crisis communication mindset is really helpful. And I do think for as long as this stretches out, like you were saying at the top of this, Chris, if it goes from, you know, 6 months to a year or whatever, we're going to have to be flexing up and down. I just think that's one of the biggest things, being agile, being nimble, and being able to respond. We're going to have times where we don't need to push out a lot of messaging, and we're going to have times we have to push out a tremendous amount of messaging. That's just not going to change.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think another way to think about it is from my experience in marketing with hospitals and health systems and service lines typically are something that you kind of turn up or down the dial, depending on the need of the organization, opportunities in the market. And if you're doing it right, you're really focusing any kind of service line marketing on a specific audience that would be most in need of what you have. The difference with COVID to me is it pervades everything. It's not limited to, you know, one wing of the hospital or one audience or one particular internal goal. It's more like a brand message, or it's more like wellness, right? If you're a system that really puts a lot of stock into helping people stay healthy, not just, you know, helping them when they're sick, and you have content and messaging around wellness, whatever that looks like, that applies across the board, right? And it's not necessarily crisis communication, though, to your point, I think there will definitely be times where that has to ramp up to that. It's more of this kind of evergreen, always on, always going to need to be talking about it. As long as COVID is with us, which according to our, depending on, I don't know, we'll have to check the news and see what it is today, right now. But according to the CDC yesterday, it's probably through next year. I think we can all agree it's going to be at some point next year. It's not going to be in a few weeks. Do we all have vaccine and it's done? I feel confident in that part of it. But sometime in 2020, spring, summer, fall, and even then, there'll probably be remnants of it. There'll be fears of it. We know that there are the long haulers, people that have gotten it and can't shake it and have significant health issues. So even once we have, you know, maximized vaccine, it's not like it's just going to go away. It'll hopefully diminish in terms of the need to communicate, but That's kind of how I think about it.
I like your analogy. Yeah, I like your analogy of kind of the brand level sort of message, because that is what we're doing. So, you know, when you're talking about service line, you're targeting down, you're targeting to conditions or certain propensities. Well, with COVID, there's like four things we want you to do, right? Wear a mask, social distancing, wash your hands. And if you have symptoms, go get a test. Like, that's kind of where we're at. And that's a very high level, like 3,000 foot message, but it's incredibly important. And really, we don't want to distract people with anything else. And we don't need to target down, because honestly, you know, it's as important as that the 21-year-old wears a mask so they don't spread it to the 65-year-old, you know? So it is, I really hadn't thought about that, but it's a great analogy of that COVID type of campaign, for lack of a better word, being really analogous to a brand level campaign.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about, and we had Mark Fretzen on a few weeks ago from UCSF, and we spent a lot of time talking about the burden just on marketers in what they've had to deal with. But let's kind of talk about that a little bit on a personal level and what planning means at that level. So whether that's your own personal plan or how you show up to drive the plan, particularly when it comes to burnout, Alan.
Yeah, I think that's been a huge issue. And I'm in the middle of a staycation at home because I really needed some time, but there was nowhere to go. Like, generally I would be booking a flight to Kauai or something, but now that you can't travel, you know, even locally, the fires have been an issue, but you got to take some time to decompress. And so I know everyone's a little different. If you're in the middle of a hotspot or you're dealing with stuff and it's bad, you can't do it now. But if you can take some time, I think between now and the end of the year, it's really helpful, even if you're just sort of staying home. And I think you can also leverage that time to think about some of your personal goals. So getting back to the planning conversation, I feel like there's a lot of value in, you know, you're going to set your marketing plan. You're going to, you know, set maybe your team goals for the year, but also taking some time to set some personal goals. And those could be professional goals that you want to do. So, and they could be tied to work. Maybe one of the goals is you want to get in front of the executives more and present updates on your marketing plan. That's a great personal goal. It'll benefit your work. But there may be other things, like you say, well, I want to make sure that I set aside time for learning, or I want to make sure I hit 5 books next year or something. But I really think that that will help in a way, again, lets you recharge a little bit, lets you step back to as normal as we can get. And then if things do kind of go crazy next year and we've got chaos happening, which we probably will at some point, it'll benefit you because you were able to do some of that. You were able to step back a little bit and you have some things to measure against too. I feel like that's really important. And again, it's as important personally as it is professionally. Like, you kind of want to pull out those goals and 6 months down the road say, oh yeah, you know, I was able to get to those 5 books I've been meaning to, or I was able to get to that presentation I wanted to do in front of the executive team. Because as crazy thing as things get, pulling out that list and feeling like you hit some of those goals and you check some of that off, it's such a rewarding experience. So I think people should do it. And again, anytime you have available between now and the end of the year, take some of the time to do that. I think you'll find it, you know, incredibly helpful. And it's a tough year. There's a lot going on. Burnout is a serious issue. And there's a lot of other strategies to cope with it. And I think people should be really mindful of it. But just sitting down and taking a little time to think about what you want to accomplish can help. It can help a lot.
Yeah. And I love the idea that even a personal plan, if you think about it the right way, just kind of provides some kind of tether to certainty, right? We're talking about the normal. By definition, that means it's uncertain times. Like you said, sometimes there's going to be chaos. I mean, we're going into the heavy part of the election season, which has its own kind of chaos to it. It's just a chaotic world right now. And that can be really disabling for folks at a personal level. Lots of anxiety, lots of depression. I mean, mental health is a huge issue. So trying to carve out something that's like, look, I'm here are the goals I'm going to set. And those can be goals that for the most part could probably happen no matter what's going on. Like your example of reading 5 books, right? No matter what's going on, likely that you're going to have a chance to try to work toward that, right? And so no matter what the storm is going on around you, you've got something that's steady, something you can fall back on, something you can turn to that just gives you a little bit of grounding, right? It doesn't have to be a big deal. It doesn't have to be some giant goal. But just those things I help provide, you know, I think can help really provide that grounding, to your point, that maybe people don't think about. But it's no good to just be like whipped about by the winds and just feeling like you're just whatever, you're going to open your browser and see some new horrible story and you're going to be blown that way. And then something else is going to happen. And then you're going to get a call from the school and there's an outbreak at the school. And like, that's going to happen. And so just something, some kind of certainty.
Exactly. And I feel too, like I've always thought that, and everyone has a different working style. But I've always felt like I work best when I can be about, 75, 25 plan versus spur of the moment things. And, you just adjust the circumstances on the ground. Sometimes you got to totally flip. So in March, it was, 90-10. It was 90 unplanned, 10% planned, right? But having something to go back to, which says, if I do have periods where I can get back to a more normal state of things, can I get that balance better? Can I get it to 50-50 or 75-25 or 80-20, whatever? And people need to do a little bit of work that works best for them. But I think it's very hard to operate in a constantly heroic mode where every day you're doing something new, you're throwing a bunch of resources at it because you have that burnout factor. So you got to get somewhere personally that works for you on that balance of planned versus spur of the moment. Make sure you're operating in kind of a good comfort zone, and then also making sure the team you lead is doing that as well. So, I have had experiences in my career where you're working for a totally just, it's chaos all the time, and you never feel like you're making ground up. So I would encourage people again, as they're thinking about the year ahead, it's like, what is your optimum ratio? If you could say how I would like to work, aim for that, put it in the plan, and know you're going to have to adjust, know that things are going to get crazy, but maybe put a stake in the ground of like, I would like to operate. This is how I would like to operate. This is how I'd like the team to operate. And we're going to shoot for this. And we might not hit it because COVID might disrupt things, but we're going to shoot for something. It just gives you a good grounding. And then that gives you kind of a milepost to really kind of put within your plan to make sure, like, how are you doing?
Yeah, that's great. All right. I think that's a great place to wrap, Alan.
Good.
Thanks so much for joining us again. Like we've had you before, but I don't think we've had you on the Known Normal. It's back in the daily podcast days when things were really crazy. We had to do this every day.
We may be back to that.
Oh no, I hope not. I sure hope not. I mean, it is still a situation that is changing so frequently. But I certainly hope that people feel like it's not a whole new upheaval every day. I suppose if you're in a hot spot or you're somewhere where things are just, for whatever reason, like you guys with your fires, I mean, my goodness, you are going through a crisis every single day there. But hopefully that's an anomaly. We've got the folks down south now who are dealing with the hurricane and the flooding, and just for sure that's chaos. But hopefully.
Yeah. Well, one thing, I guess, just on a parting note too, that has been good that's come out of this is how much people can rely on each other, and just forums like this where people can listen to others talking about what they're doing. It's been incredibly valuable. I know I've gotten a lot from the guests you guys have had on. The knowledge sharing that's happened over the last 6 months, it's bigger than any time. It's almost hard to keep up with, but it's been good because like you're not going through this alone, and there's people who can answer your questions. And I think that has been one of the good things that has come out of this.
Yeah. And we've been an industry that's always been different than most any other, from what I understand. And the fact that we get people who come together at conferences and just share, even though in many cases you're talking about competitive situations. But at the end of the day, we're all in this because we're in an industry that's about life and death. It's about keeping people healthy. And so I think that's obviously is part of it, but it's just the more we can stay together, the better off we're going to be. So we're glad you could join us today, Alan. Thank you so much.
Great. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
Yeah. And Chase, thank you, sir, as always.
Absolutely. Glad to have you back on the show, Chris.
Glad to be back. Weeks. Glad to be back. If you have something you'd like us to cover, please let us know. You can post it in the chat channel right now or send us an email at knownormal@thinkrevivedhealth.com. Next week, we're going to be joined by Dr. Robert Wynn, who is the director of the VCU Massey Cancer Center in Richmond, but also an expert in health disparities. And obviously, this crisis, this pandemic has shown a spotlight in a not positive way on what was already a really devastating issue in this country, which is health disparities. And so we're going to have him talk about you know, what he sees there and what hospitals and health systems can do in their own communities to help combat that issue. So really looking forward to that. Remember to visit thinkrevivehealth.com/COVID-19 for a recording of today's episode by the end of today, or check us out on iTunes or wherever else you listen to podcasts. And until next week, good luck out there in the no normal. Thanks for joining.